Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, 50 years later, the march from Selma to Montgomery continues with a march to Washington when it comes to voting rights in the 21st century. A frat, University of Oklahoma, they have been kicked off campus after being caught on video chanting the N-word. We'll talk to the black students on campus who made this happen. Also, another young unarmed black man killed by police in Wisconsin. We'll also talk with actor Courtney B. Vance about the emotional issue of Scandal, the episode that people are still talking about. Also, Marissa Alexander, she almost went to prison for 60 years. She joins us right here on TV One to talk about the piece she has in Essence.com. And exclusive news on the largest donation ever to an HBCU initiative. You don't want to miss that. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Many of you have seen the video of fraternity boys, frat boys at the University of Oklahoma on a bus. And what they're doing is they are using the N-word and basically saying black folks will not be members of our fraternity. Let's play the video right now. This has been blowing up social media since it was posted a couple of days ago.
There'll never be a crossing. There'll never be a crossing. You're hanging from a tree, but you'll never saw me.
The fraternity Sigma Alpha Epsilon, when that video was published, it went viral, and Oklahoma President David Boren, once he found out about it and saw it, not only did he kick SAE off the campus, he also ordered them removed from their fraternity house as well. The fraternity's national office confirmed the video is authentic, and they also have kicked those individuals out of the fraternity. Right now, I want to chat with some OU students. The group is called OU Unheard. Lauren Whiteman and Megan Johnson, they join us via Skype. Lauren and Megan, how did y'all get this video?
We got the video from an anonymous source. Another student on campus, he's actually in a fraternity, he submitted the video to us, and he said that we needed to see it immediately.
What was your reaction when you saw it?
We were angry, we were upset, we were outraged, but we weren't shocked. That wasn't our initial emotion.
Now, what's interesting is that the OU president, David Boren, he moved very quickly on this issue. There was also a protest yesterday. He joined that particular protest. How do you feel about the reaction of OU president Boren?
You know, I was very happy with his response to the situation because it was really affirming as a black student to see that he's taking it seriously and is making it a point to show us that he cares about how students feel and their safety and their support on campus. And it's especially times like these where you might not always feel that way. So it's very reaffirming to see that.
You already have the fallout. You had football players yesterday who were all black going to practice, and a major recruit for OU has decommitted and coming to the university. What do you hope changes as a result of the release of this video? And now we understand there's also another video out of the SAE house mom. Mm-hmm. She also using the N-word in a video and smiling?
Yes, we saw that last night. Last night. I mean, hopefully, you know, and don't get us wrong. Yes, you know, we are involved in this group, and yes, we're trying to shed some light on some things. And the group was active before this situation came up this weekend. The group's been active since January. But the only reason the group is active is because we love the University of Oklahoma, right? And so we don't want people to feel that it's a terrible place. We're just trying to make sure that it stays the great place we remember it being when we came here.
I want to go to our panel right now. We have Avis Jones-DeWeaver, Monique Presley, as well as Huey Newsom. What do you make of the reaction by the university? Obviously, they move very quickly because this could have easily escalated had they waited.
I'm so glad to see at least one responsible adult be able to acknowledge the fact that racism exists and it's happening on his watch, and he does something swiftly and definitively about it. Unfortunately, that is the exception and not the rule that we've come to expect when these types of things pop up.
Well, here's the difficulty. Something like that didn't happen overnight. So I like seeing swift action by the president, but when they're chanting a song like that, I mean, these boys didn't just show up and pledge and learn that song this year. That's something that's obviously been entrenched in that fraternity, and I can't believe that no one knew that that was the nature, the culture, the environment of this organization. So I like the swift action, but I do think that there's more that needs to be done at that university.
Huey, I was on social media. That was a gentleman who said he went to the University of Texas. He was an SAE member. He said 10 years ago that chant was well known. He said that's a chant that other fraternity members have used at other campuses.
And other white fraternities too on white campuses. No, this is definitely a situation where somebody got caught as opposed to being an outlier. Mm. And there's no question about it. When I was at the University of Arkansas, we had a much more egregious situation where a black professor had chairs thrown at him and racial slurs were also hurled at him as well. And so, you know, going along, this happens all across different universities across the country. It's just a matter of, I think the University of Oklahoma handled it very well in getting out in front and making sure that PR was handled properly.
Megan and Lauren, one of the things that I think a lot of people have to understand is that, look, this is learned behaviors. Not all of a sudden it just simply crops up. And one of the points that I think that I've made, and also Gabrielle Union sent a tweet out about this as well, is that what happens when individuals like this, not caught on video, what happens when they go in the workforce? This impacts the decisions they make. And so by raising this issue, you're also trying to educate this generation of students, because they could very well have an impact on who gets hired, who gets fired when they're in the workforce.
Yes. Definitely. I definitely agree. I saw a tweet yesterday that said these same people are going to be the same people that are hiring us or our children one day. And that's why we have to raise our children to be bosses and CEOs instead of just employees, and instill that mindset in them as well and in each other. So, I mean, hopefully that is coming up too. I think this entrepreneurial spirit that's coming up against young black people is really inspiring, and so hopefully that stays.
Want to get your thoughts on this. I just got an email from the Republican National Committee. Senator James Lankford, Republican senator from Oklahoma, said, quote, "The hateful video of some fraternity students that surfaced over the weekend is disgusting and does not reflect the values of the state of Oklahoma. This is not who we are. We are a state that embraces cultural and ethnic diversity at every level. We must clearly speak out against this type of bigotry. Our state has made significant strides since the Tulsa race riots and the days when Clara Luper led our state out of ignorance. We must continue that progress." What do you want elected officials to say or do moving forward?
I want elected officials to acknowledge the wrongdoing, to not try and brush it aside and say, oh, we've made great strides in Oklahoma and we're doing things that are beyond that situation, but acknowledge that there is still racism on our campus, and it does happen. And as students, we weren't shocked because we see little things. We see this all the time. No black person on our campus, I can say, was overwhelmed or deeply shocked or outraged, because we see it all the time. It's nothing new.
All right, then. Well, look, Megan and Lauren, great job, and we certainly will keep monitoring the situation. You have a great day there at OU. Even though I'm an Aggie, y'all be okay being Sooners.
Thank you.
Y'all take care. Thanks a bunch. Folks, when we come back, we'll talk voting rights in the 21st century. After the Selma celebration, what must you do next? Also, Marissa Alexander will be on the show talking about her difficulty when it came to the criminal justice system. And Courtney B. Vance will join us on the show talking about the episode of Scandal that people are still talking about just a week later. 8 at the hour. News 1 Now on TV1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
More than 100,000 folks were in Selma this weekend, focused on the 50th Jubilee of Bloody Sunday. But the question is, what is next? What's happening right now, though? There's a march taking place from Selma to Montgomery. And then they're going to also, after they finish that, then board buses to come to Washington, D.C. to push Congress to pass a bill that reinstates, of course, Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act. We had a chance to talk with Dr. Rose Sanders. She is an attorney and an activist who is very involved who actually for the last 30 years or so has been the organizer of the local effort there to celebrate the Jubilee. We chatted with her this weekend. Here's what she had to say.
We intend to get on our buses and cars. We're going to caravan all the way to Washington. We intend to be in Washington on March the 25th, the same day that Dr. King arrived in Montgomery. How dare us not arrive in Washington to say to the powers that be that you cannot and will not take away our right to vote. You will not deny us the basic rights of American citizens. So the struggle continues.
She also talked the importance of, again, keeping the movement and moving it forward.
Mm-hmm. It is a blessing to have you and so many people here as a testament to the power of the people to protect their right to vote.
We'll go to our panel right now, Avis, Monique, and Huey. What about that? Here you have all these Republicans who came down, about 23 or so. They were in Selma, yet very few have signed on to be co-sponsors of the House bill. Mm-hmm. Not a single senator has signed on. Your Senator Tim Scott, who co-chaired the delegation going down, the only black Republican senator from South Carolina. Yeah, there are no sponsors on that side. And so this has to be a push. And I think this is a direct challenge to this generation, mm-hmm. that don't just celebrate what happened in Selma 50 years ago. You must stand up for voting rights today.
Exactly. I mean, what's really interesting to me is that the Voting Rights Act was passed just 5 months from Bloody Sunday. 5 months. We have now gone almost 2 years, well over a year and a half, since the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, and it's crickets on Capitol Hill. It's time now for people not to just use us as photo opportunities down in Selma, but really get on the job and do something to protect voting rights here at home.
But it's not just crickets on Capitol Hill. I've said again that if you're organizers, if you are NAACP, if you're the National Urban League, if you're the National Action Network, if you're Rainbow Push, if you're the Advancement Project, Color Change, Leadership Conference of Civil Rights, you've got to put thousands of black folks and others on Capitol Hill, meeting with House members, meeting with senators, and saying, we're going to come here every single week, every single month, until you move on this bill.
Right, people aren't seeing the urgency. They're not recognizing that the very law that the Supreme Court struck down, that section that's supposed to keep states like Virginia and Texas from having to report to the Department of Justice, they then, after that, swiftly moved to enact legislation that makes it difficult for people who are poor, people in lower socioeconomic status, people who are minorities, to vote. They're using things like requiring government state ID, driver's licenses, and we all know that minorities are less likely to have those. So the very thing that the Supreme Court said, this law is outdated, first of all, was not true, because those states turned around and enacted legislation that they couldn't have before. And then second of all, for Congress, for just huge numbers of people to go to Selma, but then to sit here, not co-sponsor bills, not even be in favor of the bills, they're not willing to go on record and say, I'm willing to support this legislation. It's a travesty. I think that they're on the wrong side of justice.
Here, this is what I don't understand. What I don't understand is that Republicans played a crucial role mm-hmm. in the Voting Rights Act being passed in 1965. This, to me, is a perfect opportunity. If you're running around talking about the importance of the vote, democracy all across the world, and this is not just a matter of, dealing with voter ID. What this is talking about is expanding access to the ballot, What it's talking about is stopping folks from being able just to move polling places. And look, I get it. Republicans have a solid voting block there in the South. They pack black folks into these districts. But what I'm talking about is not just African Americans hitting Capitol Hill. You have all of these folks who don't speak English. They have those ballots in their own languages because of the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
And also, what you also have is young folks, young white folks, elderly should be as well, because they are also impacted by voter suppression.
You make a very good point when you talk about the sense of urgency. And right now, let's look at the dynamics of what's going on Capitol Hill. After the midterm elections, the Republicans control both chambers. So we really need to figure out how to push that, make a dialogue between the party and minorities to make it clear that there will be pain if you don't at least address our concerns. But let me say this. I think the Voting Rights Act needed to be revisited, right? Because the South, just those southern states, had certain requirements because of the statute that was originally passed in 1965. But going forward, we see other states that are also looking at voter ID, different voter requirements. Do we need to think about, okay, do we just limit it to those southern states?
No, we don't. And in fact, the bill by Congressman Sensenbrenner expands it to include, because the Supreme Court said it's unfair just to focus on those states. For instance, Ohio is not included.
Right.
But the point there is, he introduced the bill last session. He has fewer co-sponsors this session than he had last session, and no senators. But still, the people have got to move. Don't just have 100,000 going down to Selma. You literally need to have folks descending on Capitol Hill and going to all 435 House members, all 100 senators, and say, if you don't act, we're going to be back.
That's exactly right, because what's going on here is the Republican Party, they're playing dog whistle politics. They're continuing to appeal to the racist segment of America and specifically say, we are going to protect you against the black masses and the brown masses that are coming. They know they are losing a demographic battle in this nation. They know they are losing by the numbers, and so their strategy is to restrict voting to people of color. And so unless we make it difficult, just like what Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without demand. Unless we get in their face and stay in their face, they will never change, because it's in their advantage to restrict voting, not to expand it.
15 seconds.
I agree. It's incumbent on organizers, on community organizers, and on national organizers to require all of these groups of people that are getting together and marching to march for something, to go somewhere. I'm tired of these ego-driven, just grandstanding platforms and no reform coming out of it, no steps being taken. It has to mean something. So we've got people ready to mobilize. Let's do something with them.
So here's what I want to know, okay? This is very simple. This is Capitol Hill right here. Well, I want to know to the NAACP, the National Urban League. I want to know to Cornell Brooks, to Reverend Al Sharpton, to Reverend Jackson, to Wade Henderson, to Judith Brown Dianis, to Rashad Robinson. I want to know all of those folks. When are you planning the day? Is it going to be March 25th? When are you planning the day to have people, thousands on Capitol Hill, meeting with members of Congress? That's what I want to know. But again, sending out press releases, having news conferences serves no particular purpose. If we want to actually make it happen, you got to put boots on the ground, put butts in the seat. And so our civil rights organizations should be doing this now. The question is, will they? Coming up next, after Courtney B. Vance joins us to talk about last week's scandal episode that eerily foreshadowed the death of another unarmed black man at the hands of police. And we'll also give you an update of what's happening in Wisconsin about a brother who was shot and killed. Plus, Marissa Alexander, she's out of jail and speaking out about her traumatic years in prison and what she is going to do to fight the issue of criminal justice reform. Also, singer musician Damian Sneed also is on the show to talk about his new CD and an exclusive, a huge gift given to HBCUs. Trust me, you don't want to miss this announcement on News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Let's go to Madison, Wisconsin, where another unarmed black teen shot and killed by police. This took place in Madison, Wisconsin. 19-year-old Anthony Robinson was shot Friday night inside his apartment. It all started with a disturbance at a gas station, which was described on these police radio calls.
We're looking for a male black, light skin, tan jacket and jeans, outside yelling and jumping in front of cars, 19 years of age, name is Tony Robinson. Apparently, Tony hit one of his friends, no weapons seen.
Shots fired.
1247, copy, shots fired.
Photoshops came from Officer Matt Kinney, the 45-year-old, 12-year veteran of the police force, who says he was being attacked. Right now, Officer Kinney is on paid administrative leave while the Wisconsin Department of Justice conducts an investigation. Despite the fact that Tony's mother has not been able to see the body, his uncle expressed confidence in how the state will handle the investigation.
We are not proponents of anti-police in terms of the chants that I hear going on in regards to not trusting police. We don't condone that because we understand that this was an individual act that obviously the entire police department has to take the responsibility for. We are completely unbiased in this. Yes, Tony was a loved one of ours and we will miss him, and there's nothing that we can do to bring him back. But we want to know the facts of the matter and nothing else. So, fellow Madisonians, our hands are stained with the blood of my nephew, and we are all left to deal with the aftermath. He belongs now to everyone, and that's something that we've had to accept. He is now a champion of progress.
Now, on the night before Anthony Robinson was killed on ABC's hit show Scandal, Courtney B. Vance portrayed a father whose unarmed son was gunned down by a D.C. Metro police officer.
He was going to do the apprentice thing after graduation, become an electrical contractor. Even though he wasn't going to college, I put a University of Maryland sticker on my truck anyway, so if he ever got pulled over, the cops wouldn't think he was just a thug. Isn't that a future? All that? And there he is, laid out in the cold street, dead.
Courtney joins us right now to talk about this particular episode and how it is still reverberating all across the country. Courtney, good to see you, man.
Good to be seen, Roland.
Man, this was, first of all, I'm a huge Scandal fan. Anybody knows that. And watching this was interesting because the reaction on social media was amazing because you had some folks who loved it, other folks who said Shonda Rhimes and the writers went way too soft on the issue of racism and police brutality. Your thoughts on the reaction that folks have had?
These situations seem to be coming up again and again and again, and it really focuses our attention on the fact that we need to have a gloves off dialogue about black and white. It's the deepest issue that we have. That's why every time a situation comes up, we seem to keep going back over the same ground. We never really get to what the meat of the heart of the issue is that black folks and white folks are different, and we're raised differently, and our views about police based on the way we're raised are different. So it's a very huge issue, which is why we need to continue to talk it through. We have to talk it out. We can't to say that we're at a place where we understand each other. No, we don't.
Courtney, when you saw this script, did you say, "I absolutely have to do this"?
No, I did not say that. My life is complicated. My wife and I and our children and my mother has ALS. So there's a lot that goes into making decisions about in terms of our business. And this was one of those where I said, I don't know if I could move that fast because they needed to know right away. They needed an answer within a day or two. I just didn't know if I could move that fast. And my reps, took me aside and said, this is one of those you're going to have to jump on court. And I said, took a deep breath and I said, okay. I knew what it was. I knew what it was going to be. But, sometimes I can't always do everything. But I was very happy and very pleased to have been able to jump on this one and be able to be a part of this.
Huey, you have a question.
Yeah, so, looking at this episode of Scandal is very well done, by the way. Also, thinking back to the Oscars when John Legend and Common gave that very warm discussion around some of the issues we're facing. What else do you think the entertainment industry can do to really raise awareness, not just amongst our community, but also the general American population?
I think shows like this are a start. It's a national issue. It's And I would go as far to say it's an international issue because, you know, when you come from where we came from to this country and how we came to this country. And, you know, I was looking, my children and I were just doing some discussion and some reading some material and things. And my daughter asked about, you know, what's lynching? Mm-hmm. And just the idea that as a black child, you have to, if you talk about know where you came from, that we have to sit down and at some point with our children, we got to take them through who we are as a people. And who we are as a people, you have to touch slavery. Jewish folks, they always telling, they make sure they teach their children to remember what happened to them.
Never to forget.
Never forget. And that's what we have to do so that when my children go to, my wife and I's children go to the school, mostly white school that they go to.
Right.
And they deal with and interact with children. They need to know this wasn't always the way it was.
Yeah.
You and because of this, this came with a price. This was bought with blood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and our reality is different than some white folks' reality. And when you begin there, then you can potentially get to the place where there's some understanding why when a situation like O.J. Simpson happens and people, the verdict came down and black folks reacted one way and white folks reacted the other way. And the question is, why? That's the question we never got to. Why do we react differently when on issues of race?
Absolutely. Why? Well, Courtney, it was a great episode. We certainly thank you for joining us. And folks, if you missed the episode, you can watch it on the Watch ABC app or go to abc.com. Courtney, thanks a bunch. Tell your wife, Angela, hello.
Sure. Thank
you. All right, then. Thank you very much. Folks, coming up next, Marissa Alexander. She spent more than 1,000 days in prison for shooting a warning shot at her estranged husband. She's here to talk about her ordeal. 27 before top of the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
One gunshot got Marissa Alexander sentenced to 20 years in prison, minimum 20 years in prison, even though she says she was defending herself from her estranged, abusive husband. And even though her state of Florida recognized stand your ground law for George Zimmerman, who shot and killed Trayvon Martin. Well, 4.5 years and 1,000 days in jail later, her conviction was overturned and she was sentenced to 3 years for assault. There were many of us who focused on this story. There were folks who mobilized, who protested to get her freed, and she is now out. She has she has home confinement, though. And so she joins us right now via Skype from Florida. Marissa, certainly glad to see you. I interviewed your father and your former husband on the story and others as well. So it's glad to finally see you.
Same to you. I'm glad to finally be able to, you know, make your show. I appreciate everything you've done.
Well, this was a story that got lots of folks' attention because of this argument, because of this battle between you and your estranged husband and the state prosecutor. They wanted to put you in jail. And you had to also deal with the fact that Florida law at the time said if you fire a shot, even if you didn't hit anyone, there's a mandatory minimum that was involved. And so this has really focused people on the nuances of the laws in that state and other states.
Correct.
And so how have you done? What I also understand is that while you were in jail, you became quite the legal eye, if you will, in terms of working on your own case.
Well, to some degree. I mean, nobody's going to fight for your life like you're going to fight for your own. So I absolutely had to be involved in, you know, reviewing my documentation and any instructions that my attorney gave me and anything that I could find out and read and absorb. That's what I was doing. So I would say legal eye is a stretch, but, you know, nobody knows that my situation like I do. And from a legal standpoint, you know, that helps my attorney.
One of the things that also happened is that the state of Florida changed the law that if a warning shot was fired, they invoked staying your ground versus leaving it up to a judge. And so and many of them are calling that Marissa's law.
Oh, I didn't know it was that. I thought it was just a warning shot law. But yeah, I've heard about it. I haven't had any opportunity to really review some of the nuances of it, because a lot of that stuff can just be very, you know, cumbersome to read through. But I did hear about it. I did see that it passed. So, you know, it wouldn't have helped me at the time during my case, but, you know, eventually helped someone else.
Marissa, we're so happy to see you out of jail, even though, quite frankly, you're not totally free. You are confined to your home. You do have to cover the cost of that yourself. And a lot of people are saying that you deserve a governmental pardon. Is anybody working with the governor to make sure that that happens?
You know, I'm not 100% sure, you know, not from my legal standpoint, you know, because one of the things that, you know, I needed to focus on was just being able to be successful on this probation, because I have, you know, about 2 years on it. So as far as anything beyond that, we haven't really discussed it, hadn't looked into it. If there's groups doing it, I'm not sure about it. But right now, mine is just to focus on a day-to-day, you know, being successful so I can get through it.
Marissa, glad you're home and hope that you are continuing to do well there. I know that at the heart of everything that happened to you was a domestic violence situation that had been ongoing, that didn't start that day. Do you have any plans for advocacy in that area, or just anything that you want to say to a woman who's listening now who may be going through a similar situation?
Well, you know, that is the issue of domestic violence is something, you know, that I feel strongly about. It's not talked about as much. And I think, you know, as I was, you know, I think in jail or, no, I was out during time, I've seen different stories about it. And it'll be a time where I'll be able to, you know, speak more freely, I should say, and at liberty about things that I believe that people should know. You know, timing is of the essence, and time, right now isn't the time, but I will be able to, so I'm looking forward to that. In the meantime, I'm just educating myself on things and that other, you know, programs and, you know, issues of domestic violence have to, you know, deal with right now.
Marissa, did you feel as if you, not necessarily targeted, mm-hmm. but when you look at how different cases are handled, even when you were released, that was this effort to still try to get you in jail for 60 years, even trying to revoke your probation. Did at any point you feel as if, why am I so harshly being targeted by prosecutors?
You know, I'm gonna be honest with you, really have to keep your eye focused moving forward, because if you at any point, I mean, the journey was incredibly different. I mean, difficult. It was extremely difficult. And so for me to spend any time on what somebody else was doing was not going to help me. I mean, I was in the fight for my life. It was 60 years or whatever. So I could spend a time saying, well, why? And, you know, and certainly you're like, well, God, this is, you know, quite a stretch, because I had no idea it would be so severe. But when you're in the thick of it, you really have to keep your eyes high. Otherwise, you can get really absorbed with the negativity. And on top of that, and fighting for a case, it can just be overwhelming. So I just really just stayed myself. You know, I saw it happening. Don't get me wrong. It's not like you couldn't see it and maybe even feel some type of way about it. But I really focused on what's next and what do I have to do to be free of this.
I got about 20 seconds left. How long are you in home confinement?
24 months.
What are your work plans? How are you able to work?
Well, I'm working from home. I was blessed enough to have an opportunity with a company, so I work from home, and I'm just going to be successful and ride this time out and be done with it.
And you're allowed to pick your kids up, go doctor's appointments, things along those lines. Anything else, you have to get permission from the court, correct?
Correct, for now. And then those things will be added. So we have the opportunity in the agreement to add those things with the judge's approval, of course.
Okay. Well, Marissa, folks, she has her story at Essence.com. You can also check it out in the upcoming issue, in the May issue of Essence magazine. Marissa Alexander, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank
and
you.
See, well, even with home confinement, you can just watch TV1 every day. You can just watch it.
Right. That's serious. In the bed. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Also, want to thank Avis, Monique, and Huey as well. Coming up next on News One Now, he's played almost every type of music out there, but his latest project is his gospel CD. Recording artist Damien Sneed stops by. Also, we get exclusive news on an eight-figure donation to historically black college organization. benefiting HBCUs. Trust me, you do not want to miss that. This is News One Now on TV One.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Music producer Timbaland, he turns 43. Jasmine Guy turns 53. On this day in history, in 1969, James Earl Ray pleads guilty to the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. In 1972, the first National Black Political Convention is held, bringing together civil rights leaders from various organizations, setting National Black Agenda that took place in Gary, Indiana. Also in 1972, Maya Angelou becomes the first black woman to have a major motion picture produced when her movie, Georgia, Georgia, premieres. Folks, gospel, jazz, R&B, pop, and even classical, there's no genre of music that Damien Sneed hasn't mastered. And now he's showing his talents once again in his gospel double disc project, Broken to Minister, the deluxe edition, which is out right now. Of course, the song that you're here to play right now, what song is that?
Forever.
Forever.
Yes.
Of course, Damien joins us right now. So, Damien, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Not getting snazzy pocket square there.
Thank
so,
you
know, that's how we do it on the show. What is it about? I mean, typically when people are singing, performing, they like to stick to one area. Why have you wanted to do all of them?
Basically, when I was growing up, my parents exposed me to a lot of various styles of music, and one of my mentors, Wynton Marsalis, was well known for his work in jazz and classical at the same time.
Yep.
So it's something I continue.
Plus, he's done pop, he's done...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Many different genres. So that I just try to continue in that vein. Yes.
So you have this double project here, and so what makes this unique?
The deluxe edition is unique because it has different styles. It's traditional gospel, contemporary gospel. You'll hear jazz stylings, you'll hear classical, you'll hear a cappella music, and some Nigerian worship songs. It's something for everybody on it.
Is it also, I think, important to let folks know that, because again, you're a traditionalist when it comes to gospel, you know, this is gospel music, that gospel actually, you know, affects all different areas of music?
Most definitely, and gospel music also, a lot of the roots theoretically come from blues and come from jazz and come from Baroque music, so gospel is already inclusive. A lot of people don't realize that it's inclusive of many different styles.
Now, who are some of the folks that you have on here? What makes this double disc project so special?
Well, I have the Levites on this project. I also have my independent record label co-founder, Iona Locke, on there with me. There are lots of different singers, Takesha Russell, who's an artist on my label, and the thing that makes it different is I released the EP a few years ago, but this project, there's actually an extended version of each song, so it gives the listener the feeling of being in a live recording or a live church experience.
And speaking of live, you're going to be performing at Carnegie Hall in New York?
Yes, it's going to be my Carnegie Hall conducting debut, and I'm going to be conducting Wynton Marsalis' Abyssinian Mass with the Jazz Lincoln Center Youth Orchestra and about 150 young singers.
Gotcha. You'll be conducting, and so that's a whole different thing than just singing.
Completely different hat, completely different part of the brain, conducting, you know, the musicians and singers and being aware of the score in real time to be able to make sure that it lives and it's alive and it's not just something static or stagnant that I'm just, you know, flapping my arms with.
Yeah. Well, as someone who was in the band in elementary school, junior high, and high school, I certainly understand how difficult that is. So trying to bring all those pieces together. So what role did you play in having the different pieces to sort of create this experience for Carnegie Hall?
Because I had a chance to work closely with Wynton when he was conceiving and creating and composing the piece, gives me a good knowledge of the inner workings of what the composer wants. And a good conductor always brings out certain motives and themes and colors that the composer wanted. And my experience doing the Abyssinian Mass tour gave me a lot of experience doing that.
So when is Carnegie Hall taking place?
Sunday, April 26th at 8:30 p.m.
Okay, then. Well, yeah. Man, we certainly appreciate it. Good luck. I can't wait to listen to the project. Coming up next, I'm going to chat with Johnny Taylor, the Thurgood Marshall Fund, about a huge, huge donation they are receiving. But turn the music down. We got to have people come on my show who are singers. They got to sing us to break.
Okay, cool.
So you're going to sing us to break right now. Show what you're working with.
Come thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace.
Damien's CD, folks, pull it up, please. Pull it up, like right now. Pull the CD up. I need to show the CD. Thank you very much. like right now. Thank you. Damien Sneed featuring the Levites. It is called Broken to Minister Deluxe Edition. Damien, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
All right, man. I'm Roland Martin. This is News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, it's difficult when you're trying to send kids to schools these days. And, of course, people are impacted by huge student loan debt. And many of our HBCUs have been suffering from significant financial difficulty. And so they're trying to raise money. Well, guess what? We have Johnny Taylor with the Thurgood Marshall Fund. He's president and CEO with a huge announcement, a eight-figure gift that's being bestowed upon the Thurgood Marshall Fund. So, Johnny, welcome back to the show. And so tell us about this big news.
Man, the Apple Corporation surprised us all this morning, broke the news on Fortune magazine this morning that they were going to give over $40 million to the country's historically Black colleges and universities.
Well, considering all of Macs and the iPads and the iPhones I got,
so
I'm glad, Apple, Tim Cook, who's there, the CEO, and also Lisa Jackson, who used to be the head of the EPA, she's an executive at Apple as well. So exactly what is this $40 million going to do? What is it going to cover?
Well, so we're going to cover everything from student investment. First of all, I want to make the point that it is exclusively for HBCUs, Roland. Too often these announcements go out and part of the money goes to HBCUs and part of the money goes elsewhere. Every one of these dollars will go to HBCU students for internships, scholarships, first-time gigs, first-time jobs. Also to our faculty, because people oftentimes forget the HBCU faculty are the ones who are responsible for preparing these students to get into these competitive roles. So everything from internships, we have an Opportunity Funding Corporation, which focuses on entrepreneurialism. I don't know if you saw yesterday with Apple's watch announcement.
Right.
I read all over the lines, the chatter was crazy, a frenzy about the entrepreneurs who were going to work and develop apps for the Apple Watch. Well, the reality is very few of those people look like us.
Right.
And so we hope to encourage not only job seekers, but also people who want to create jobs through our entrepreneurial efforts.
And so announcement was made. How long has this been in the works? How long have you been talking back and forth?
About a year. It's funny, these, birthing an eight-figure gift like this, over $40 million, requires a lot of time. You mentioned Lisa Jackson, you mentioned Tim Cook, but the sort of person behind the scenes working with us is the head of global HR, an HBCU alum, Denise Young Smith, and she was.
I've met her before.
You met her. That's just as tight. Mm-hmm. Okay, she's also, by the way, you'd love it. We should have her on here sing too. She's an amazing opera.
We'll hook it
performer.
Up.
In any event, she worked with us, her team, her head of diversity and inclusion, and we didn't just want to give a gift. I mean, they said we need to make an investment in HBCUs, and so we spent several months designing a program that will put resources exclusively into HBCUs, but that would ultimately help their students become not only future Apple employees, but also part of the Apple entrepreneurial ecosystem.
And we talk about folks who are majoring in computer science and those areas as well. This is going to establish a direct link to the world's largest company.
They're absolutely. Most innovative, the largest, the sexiest company. When our students talk about where they want to work, Apple is at the top of the list. And we want to make sure that they have the skills that the faculty will prepare them to ultimately compete for those roles within Apple.
Now, you say just to HBCUs, and so just HBCU, not predominantly Black institutions.
Not predominantly Black institutions, not Black students at majority institutions, HBCUs. And by the way, what's unique about this award is we're going to take into consideration public and private HBCUs. As you know, although the Thurgood Marshall College Fund represents historically Black publicly supported HBCUs, we're going to look at all of the students. I love this component of our overall program. They want to know where's the talent. So one of the things that they're investing in is for us to go into the marketplace and disprove this myth that the talent doesn't exist. They know that HBCUs have historically been recognized for their historical contributions. They want to know where are the students today. We know that HBCUs are producing very talented students today, and so they're investing in today's students so that we are the future history makers.
Well, this should also put some pressure on other companies to step up, because Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. has been very involved in pushing Silicon Valley when it comes to diversifying their ranks. This very well could be seen being as a part of that. Intel made their huge announcement, a $300 million commitment just a couple of months ago.
That's right. I'm waiting on the details of that, but I'll tell you, it's really important. Apple was not forced to do this, at least from my perspective. We were talking about this before everyone started talking about
right.
the diversity challenge. Denise Young said, you know, her mandate is talent. And so she said it's all about the HBCUs providing talent to Apple and the tech
Well, market. Johnny, congratulations on that. And also the thanks to Apple, Tim Cook, Lisa, as well as the Denise as well. We appreciate it, man. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Folks, tomorrow News One Now. We got more news for you right here.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.